All right, my name is Sam Smith, and today what we're going to talk about is Virtual Events 101. We're going to start talking about the basics of virtual events, and what I want to do is to kind of give you an overview of what they're about, what they're doing, and we're going to approach this from a different way. I'm not going to talk about... It's not loud enough. All right. I'm going to approach this from a higher level and talk about what it can do for your events first, and we're going to approach it from that way. Then we're going to talk about, and what I really want to do is to give you a different way to think about your events, all right, and give you a little bit of a structure for doing that. And then we'll look at how these virtual technologies can fit in, and then we'll talk about some of the details. But at the very beginning, what we're going to do is we're just going to get real clear about what does this term virtual events mean, and we'll do it in that way. And so I've got some definitions. I also have some statistics that I'll share with you about what people are doing. So if you're curious about what others are doing with virtual events, we have that as well. And then at the very end, if there's time, I do have some best practices on hybrid events, as well as some metrics that are good tips for you to just kind of take home and put in your pocket. But really, we're not going to spend a lot of time on them. We're going to highlight them, because all you need to do now is write them down and take them with you. All right, so a little bit about me, and I apologize for the wonderful, beautiful sunlight. It buried this picture, but there's this cute little girl in here, and that's my daughter. She's two, and she's the real reason that I exist. I spend a lot of my time. I've been in the technology business for about 13 years, working with different types of technology. I've been in the international meetings and events business for about 4 years, almost 4 years. And in the last year, I've spent a lot more time with her, so I've been doing a lot of event technology consulting, a lot of blogging, and now I'm really a full-fledged member of the press. I get a lot of companies contacting me with their press briefing about what they're doing. I have a really good vision on a lot of the newest technologies that are going on in events. And what we're going to try to do today is to put some of that in context for virtual events for you. I also have this wonderful wife that you can't see, but what's most important in this picture is that we live in Switzerland for 3 more days, and we got the official Swiss cowbell, which is the accomplishment that says that you're really an authentic Swiss person if you have this, and I'm quite proud of it, and it even has our name on it in French, Famille Smith, and no, I won't be wearing that for those of you who are wondering about thinking that. So that's a little bit about me. Oh, also, so I said in 3 days I'm going to be living in Switzerland, or I will be living in Switzerland for 3 more days. I'm moving to Minneapolis, Minnesota, which is the frozen tundra. We're moving back to Minnesota from Europe because of my wife's job. She's a rock star in marketing for a medical technology company. And so, no, that's not our house, but that's what they have in Minneapolis, Minnesota. But we are moving back there, and it's a wonderful place. Okay, this presentation also will follow the law of 2 feet. Does anyone know the law of 2 feet? Everybody has 2 feet. If this presentation isn't doing what I said it would do, if it's not interesting to you, there are many other things you should be doing with your time if this is boring. So go ahead and leave, and it'll be okay. Because you might have read the material and said, this is the presentation I want to be in, but you might realize it's not. And that's okay with me because it's so beautiful here. Is it working for you? Okay. All right, so let's get to the meat of this. How do you define a virtual event? And what I want you to do is really turn to your neighbor right now and think about what you've heard and what you think a virtual event is. And let's go ahead and talk about that amongst yourselves. And then what we're going to do is pull out some of your ideas out here, and then we'll see what the experts are saying virtual events are. So, go. All right, let's come back together. Pull it up. All right, let's come back together and see what kind of definitions did you come up with. I've heard several different types of definitions. Some of them are around technology and cyberspace. Some of them are around a new way to meet. Did I capture that correctly? Yeah, okay. Were there other definitions? Over here, anyone? Non-physical attendance. Right? In the back corner? No? Okay. Exactly. And one of the things that I think is important is if you listen to some of these terms, none of them had to do anything with avatars and with web video or whatever, those are ways that you can create a virtual event, right? And I think that's an important thing that some people, they get lost in, and they get focused on the technology, the individual types of technology itself. You don't think about it at a higher level. And sometimes people think about virtual events as this kind of thing where you've got like crazy 3D animation touching each other. Sometimes you think it's where there's going to be characters walking around, and it's really virtual is all of this. And this happens to be a virtual trade show that's organized by MPI New York. That's their MPI booth in that trade show. But here's what Kelly Graham at Cisco says. She says the virtual event is really just an umbrella term, right? Because for any event that's not face-to-face, because when it comes down to it, if you have a face-to-face meeting of any size, that's a face-to-face meeting. But if you meet on a virtual platform or in a virtual space, that's when you start to go into this virtual. And it doesn't mean anything, one thing in particular. It's more of a concept. George P. Johnson. Is anyone here from George P. Johnson? You are? Okay. All right. Are you Sue? Sue. Hi, Sue. Sue, I have some data from a report that you guys just put together that I'm going to share. So one of the things that George P. Johnson said in a report that they've recently created for the Virtual Edge Summit is that they put it all together as a gathering of many people connected through an online environment, right? And so one of the things that struck me about that is it really changes and says instead of a venue that you're organizing your event, you're organizing it in this new environment, this new space. And if you look at things as an environment, it's just a new place for people to meet, a different type of place. I like that part of the definition. All right, we've had a little shift. I hit this thing. Okay. All right, so that's a good easy fix, huh? Last October, Forbes did a report on face-to-face meetings and really tried to make said, what's the case for face-to-face meetings? And in that report, this particular chart, figure number 6, if you're familiar with the report, jumped out at me because they interviewed a bunch of different business executives and said, when should we be doing face-to-face meetings? When should we be doing virtual meetings? And what are the right types? And if you look here, red means face-to-face, okay? So in almost every case, every type of meeting, they said, we should be doing face-to-face. But in a few different places, which I've highlighted over here, they said virtual is actually a better thing. And what I think is important for you to take away is that if you're, and when you have these slides, these slides will be on the internet so you can download them, but these are things like engagement, focus, inspiration, motivation, things that we're familiar with. But when they said virtual was a good call, are in things like data presentation and information dissemination. And to me, that means that if you're only doing events where it's a speaker talking and then the attendees are listening the whole time, you're going to have a lot of pushback and they're going to really push you into virtual events, and that's when you should also consider it. Now, if you talk to a lot of the virtual people, there's also a lot of engagement strategies that are coming and a lot of different ways to meet, and we're going to talk about some of that. But I want you to keep that in mind. Now, the other thing that I've seen in this new report that came out, this Virtual Market Outlook report, and in fact, I just found it this week, and so I threw some of the data in here because I thought it was interesting, is that this is where people are using virtual events in their company. All right? And so they're using it for presentations, internal meetings, training and education, conferences. Now, here's an interesting thing, lead generation and sales calls. The sales calls, if I've read the report correctly, There's two things that I found was interesting is that 33% of companies said they'd like to use it for sales calls, but also at the same time, 25% of companies, tell me if I got this wrong, but 25% of companies, you don't know it? Okay, all right. Well, 25% of the companies said absolutely no way would we do a sales call virtually, right? But what's powerful here, for you, what you need to take away are these are where your clients are going to want or could be considering a virtual event and where you could put that into your toolbox and use it, okay? The companies that responded in this report, a virtual event pops into their mind as we should do this, were things like certification, lead nurturing, support user group meetings and trade shows. I thought that was also really important. There's a lot. The lead nurturing, we're going to talk about this a little bit more in terms of how virtual events can extend. You can use them as part of either a hybrid event, but also a way to extend your conference life. So if I were you, my recommendation is that when you're talking with your clients, or your internal or external clients, wherever they are, and you're thinking about virtual events, you're organizing these types of meetings, think about including them in your strategy. It's part of your total event strategy. Now, technology. Notice it was not the first thing we started with. It's towards the end. Here, these are all the different technologies that are under that umbrella of virtual. These are all the different platforms that you can have. There are things like webinars and webcasts, and we're going to talk about these in more detail. Virtual events, and it goes all the way down to online job fairs, 3D virtual worlds, all of that. And that what they've said about the technology adoption, if you look at it, webinars are highly adopted. Online job fairs are not adopted so much. But the key thing here is they said the adoption is directly related to the amount of time these technologies have been on the market, which means that as people get more and more experience using them, their adoption will go up because they start to develop standards and best practices. They learn from other people's mistakes. And in this space right now, I will tell you, every single week, someone has tried something new and they succeeded really well and they failed. Right? And so there's a lot of best practices that are emerging. 2009 was an amazing time for experimentation here. And then this is also, and in 2010, I think we're going to continue to see that. So when you put these into your event strategy, keep in mind that you want to look for, there's not going to be a book that says these are the best practices for what you should do or how you should do it, but there are a lot of resources that are really coming together around this. Now, how should you, this is a, when it comes to your event, I want to ask you to think differently about your event. And I want you to think about your event not as just the attendees that came on site, but I want you to think about it as a larger community. Okay? And think about it as a like-minded community, because your clients, whatever kind of event they're organizing, there are many more people that could come to their event than actually do come. Right? Do you agree to that? And then you also have groups that know about your event and couldn't come. Maybe they were moving. I don't know. And then you also have people that didn't come. They decided for whatever reason that they didn't want to come. But then there are this third group of people that have no idea that you exist. Okay? And so these people they're like-minded. They should be a part of what you're doing. They could be a part of what you're doing. They should be a part, but they don't know you exist. And one of the things that you can do with virtual events is engage this crowd in the middle that possibly could pull some of these people into your event. Right? You following me? Oh, and also, I'm a native English speaker, so I speak really fast sometimes. So if I don't, or if you don't understand me, or I use the wrong language, please raise your hand and tell me. So do you understand? Okay, so what we're going to talk about, so these people right here are, to me, these are like your fans. These are the fans that love you. They come to the concert, they go crazy, they buy all of your, they buy your t-shirts, whatever. And I know you don't sell that, but think about it as a metaphor. The fans go crazy, they paint themselves, and these are they have more cowbell. And these are the people that you want to engage. So with that in mind, that's that second tier. Your attendees on site are going to be there, and then there's a second tier. With that in mind, what I want you to do is now I'm going to give you four different ways to think about how virtual events can extend your event, can change your event that you have, okay? Because right now, a lot of people think about the event as this two-day activity. We're going to have an explosion of information, right? We're going to put all these speakers and content and everything inside of it, and it's just going to be magical, and it is, and boom. But with virtual technologies, we're going to talk now about how we can extend the event and then how we can move it in different directions. So for a lot of people, a lot of people that didn't come to this session are looking at virtual events and saying, ooh, they're scary to me. These could be taken away from my position, from my job. But what I want you to do is look at them as an opportunity. Because this collision between the digital technology and the face-to-face is creating new opportunities. And those opportunities are to extend your meeting, include more people, change the way that people interact, as well as give you new formats for having an event. So when I say extend the meeting, what do I mean? Right? Because it's really this stretching process. How are we going to stretch it out? And I want you to, so this is your event. Your event is one touch point in a series of conversations and a series of communication points. And these are digital touch points. Some of these are going to be emails, thank you emails. Some of them could be press releases. It could be a whole bunch of things, but they could also be webinars and webcasts. So what you can do is have webinars and webcasts that help share your content. So instead of having a huge explosion, you have several smaller explosions of content. You also can use these to pull people in. Some of the, there's data that's now emerging where they're using webinars and webcasts and virtual of these kind of 3D virtual events or other types of virtual events that are then drawing people into the main event, right, where they wouldn't have drawn them before. And they're getting to that third tier of people that didn't necessarily know that the event was occurring. The other thing that, the other opportunity that exists is to include more people. Remember I said that second ring of people, these were people that love you and would love to be a part of your event in one way or another, but they can't come for one reason. So one of the opportunities here is to use a hybrid event model where you have a face-to-face event and then maybe you webcast your event to the outside world. For those of you that are MPI, well, is everyone here an MPI member? Mostly. Did anyone do the virtual access pass at Meet Different last week or participate in it? No? Well, at Meet Different, so when, you know, not everyone can attend the Meet Different event, so they had a virtual access pass that allowed people like myself to be at home, but then also participate in several of the sessions. So I could watch the sessions, get the content, see the slides, those things. Today they're recording this. They're going to put it on online later, which helps people, will help people out in this section, but not live. The other thing that virtual events are doing is increasing interaction. Not on site, but this is where it's important. It's right here in this bridge, because you can bridge this virtual attendee audience, this virtual audience, with your face-to-face audience, all right? So that's a very important thing to be able to do, because your virtual attendee or remote attendee is a real person. Some people are charging, some people are not, but they're a real attendee that deserves a lot of attention. Now the fourth format. All right, sorry about hopefully after the music you guys did some dancing and this isn't such a dense content, but you also have some new formats that have emerged, and those are things like telepresence or virtual world. And what they're doing for you is they're giving you new ways to bring people together. Okay. So, for example, in the telepresence space, what you're seeing is you're seeing people have smaller on-site meetings in different cities, and then bringing the people together through the telepresence technology into a much larger event. And so, instead of having to ship everyone to one destination, they're having much smaller meetings across the world. All right. Okay. So those are the four opportunities. That's heavy stuff. But now we're done. So when you're thinking about your virtual events and when it might fit into your strategy, these are four places where it could fit into what you're trying to do, okay? Four new opportunities. Now let's talk about some technology. And for me, these are three of the technology tools that are the most used and the most valuable. This webinar, hybrid meeting, virtual worlds, but also you have telepresence, which I just talked about a little bit, and I'll show you some images and talk a little bit more about what people are doing. Is everyone with me? Are there any questions? Everyone's okay. Everyone's happy. I didn't mean okay. You're happy. Okay. All right. So here we go. So webinar. Now, what we learned earlier in this presentation is that the webinar is the most used tool that we have. It's been around for a long time. And so we have a lot of experience. Does anyone here have experience doing webinars? Yeah? Okay. So for those of you that are using webinars, I'll just ask you out loud, how are you using them as part of your event strategy? Or are you including them in your event strategy? As an educational tool? So do you do it before the event or after?
That would be before, without the event, actually.
You do it instead of the event. Okay.
So.
Yeah. So in the planning process, all right? Anyone else? Yeah, Mika. So you're using it as a to introduce some content, introduce some new ideas, and then adapting the on-site content based on that, based on the feedback from that. All right, interesting. So seeing people, so those are great examples. The other thing that I've seen people do is use with these webinars. One thing that's really genius is that they have a registration process, and so you start to and they're also online, so then they can be sent out to people, so you can share them with a lot of different type of people. So they can email them, put them in social media, on Facebook or wherever, and forward the links, and then the people register. So then they start, so for events where lists are important and named lists, they can use these to pull in new names of people that weren't in their target audience, and then introduce the content to those people. So if you think about it in terms of a marketing funnel, for those of you that are working with corporate events that are doing marketing, if they want to pull in people into their face-to-face event, they might introduce some of the content or introduce them to a new product or new services or whatever in the virtual event or in the webinar, and then use that to pull them into the face-to-face event. All right? There's 5 steps here that I think are important. They're kind of common. This is and I like to simplify things as much as possible. So I like to oversimplify. So if you think it's oversimple, then it is. But I think it's really important that you keep it as simple. Well, registration, testing, presentation, recording, and archiving. When you do one of these events, you want to test the technology in advance. You want to test the presentation and the way the communication works. You want to test it not only from the back office side or from the speaker side, but you also want to test it from the attendee side. You, as an event organizer, needs to understand how the attendee will experience it, because they're going to be one click away from doing anything else, right? They're one mouse click away from going to do something else. And so you need to understand what that experience is going to be like and how it will work so you can keep their attention. You also want to record it and archive it. The archiving is important because as you start to reach out and connect with a global audience, they're not going to always be available at the time you set up your webinar. So if you set up your webinar at 5 p.m. in London, which is 11 a.m. in New York, which is 8 a.m. in California, you're not going to be able to get everyone to participate. But if you record it and archive it, they can jump on and watch and review the content when they're ready. Okay? This also gives your content a longer life. So instead of having that explosion, you're going to have smaller explosions, and then it can be reused in other ways. Okay? Sound file. Okay, I made a small note for myself on that next slide. That when it comes to that experience, there are a couple things that you want to pay attention to. And let's use this is an example of a webinar. What they have here is they have sound on this side. They have the slides that they're using there, and they have a place for chat. Okay, but there's a fourth element, if you can get it, and that's video. All right, a fourth element to the experience, because the sound adds a lot of context to things, and that's nice. But then when you have the video, you can start to see their nonverbal communication. You can start to see how they're communicating and read the authenticity. And that part is important as well. So if you can achieve those 4 things in the experience that you're creating, you'll be in good shape, right? So sound, slides, chat, and video, right? And the chat part, the chat is really feedback, some kind of dialogue with that audience, because your virtual audience, this comes right out of e-learning. The e-learning people have said that the audience that's in the virtual world wants to create community as well. Okay? So they want to be a part of the community. And so if you can give them an opportunity to have the chat function, wherever that is, if you do it on Twitter or whatever, that will benefit them. Okay. So here's an example of a project plan from a webcast that Cisco uses. So this is their timeline that they've used. And notice that I think that you can't read all of this and you're not going to write it all down, but here's what's important. This is, they're treating this as a real event and planning these as real events, right? So it's not just this thing we're going to throw together and do. They're following a process that gives it, where they start planning and thinking 10 to 11 weeks in advance, and they also have, and they're also measuring at the end, right? And following up with measurement. And so we'll talk a little bit about that, the measurement part later. But what you want to take away from this right now is that it's not just a thing you're going to throw together. It's something you want to think about and use it as a strategic part of your process. The hybrid meeting. This is a different... Uh-oh. Are you okay, sir? Do you have a question? Okay. All right. Hybrid meeting. So the hybrid meeting is the opportunity to take your face-to-face event and extend it, right? Include more people. So in this case, have any of you participated in a hybrid event or organized one? Yes, a couple of you. Can you tell me about your experience? Can you tell the group about your experience? I have to record it. I'm sorry.
Basically, it was a meeting on sharing information in the virtual world, and the example as such was that the whole meeting basically functioned that you could participate physically or through the web.
Okay.
With all the slides there and all of the materials, it permits in-time chat on screen, so there would be screens, so you can see that, and simultaneously there would be a, you know, through technology, it's not a problem that actually you could hear other people commenting after the lecture, so there was a communication established as such.
And so you had the face-to-face, and then you had people, were the people watching it, was it being streamed through video?
Yeah.
So streamed through video, and then you also had a way for the people in the remote attendees to communicate back to the on-site event so they could ask questions and make comments?
Yeah, it's sort of a complete tool. I cannot remember the name right now. It is sort of a more... It was in a relatively testing time, so it had some bugs in it, but it functioned pretty well. As I said, in the main part of the screen, you would have the slides of the presentation.
Yep.
They could hear the presenter on their own, and they could also, you know, make their own comments when they were asked.
Okay. So the thing about the... Thank you for sharing your story. So a couple things that I heard there that I think are important are that when you're going to do the hybrid event, you want to include those fans at home. And so when you do that, you're going to the best of your ability with the hybrid... Well, if you really want it to succeed, I think that you need to include video in it. And this is an example of a hybrid event that was done in Washington, D.C. They had 70 people on site in this photo, and they had 5,000 people online watching it. Right? There's no way in a million years they could have got all of those people on site in advance because it was a first-time event, a first year. So what this company did in this event, they used the hybrid event as a window of opportunity to give people a sample of the event. Because as you know, your events are experiences, right? And it's really hard to put those into brochures. It's really hard to put them in marketing materials, websites, whatever. So they opened up a one-hour session where they had some of their top speakers do a panel. They invited everyone to register for free online to participate. And then they took questions, and I apologize for the light picture thing, but on the background here, these are all the questions from the virtual audience that are coming in, the questions and comments. So they put all of that in. Now what they've got out of, what this organization did is now for their event next year, they have a huge database of people that they can promote the event to. They have a whole bunch of people that are talking about the event and thinking about it, right? And then possibly they can now take this event and decide to expand it, right, from one day to 2 days or whatever. And so that's one of the things you want to think about if you're going to do the hybrid event is to use it to try to draw in more people, kind of give them a window, open up a window to your event. This particular technology here is Ustream. It's a free service that you can use. And this is how it looks from the participant point of view. I was mentioning that before. You have the video over here. You also have the comments from all of the attendees, what they're saying about the event and what they're thinking. And so I think that, and so There are many different types of technologies that will do this, but what you want to do is go look for those four things that I mentioned before. All right? And then the hybrid meeting also, just to reinforce, it's during your physical face-to-face event. Any questions? No? Okay. Here's another example of how you can put together that timeline. And again, the remote attendee and their participation in the hybrid event, you want to treat that as a real event and think about it as a real event, just as you do the face-to-face event. All right. So I think that part is really important. Okay, telepresence. So if we were to change the way we think now, let's go to this telepresence. And the idea behind telepresence are two things. One, that you can have you have people in remote places that look almost real on a screen, high quality video, and that are participating. A lot of small meetings can use telepresence, where they have tables, people sitting at different tables, and then on the other side, in other places, other remote places, these people, they have a mirror on the other, essentially a mirror of the people on the other side. All right. Has anyone seen telepresence before? Some telepresence people. Martin, I'll give you the microphone. Martin, why don't you tell us about your experience? And then we'll ask Sue to tell us hers as well.
I think I saw it the first time at one of the Regis venues. Regis are an office provider, really, worldwide, and they installed telepresence in a number of their venues. I think was it the middle of last year they kicked off, or the end of last year, something like that. September, I think, they went live with about 11 of these venues. The one I went to see was in London. It's exactly the same layout as that. Very impressive, and interesting economic figures that they quote. You know, huge savings on meetings of a reasonably, you know, a small sort of figure, but huge savings on travel and time, obviously. But very, very good technology, I thought. And telepresence has now been installed by a number of Marriott properties. I think they announced that last week.
Yep.
So I can't remember how many, but quite a few, and then they're rolling them out in bigger areas and sort of gateway cities and so on.
That's right. So Marriott, there's also a Ruth's, some restaurants in a restaurant chain in the United States is doing it. Also Cisco, they're providing a framework for what these venues can look like, but with a third-party provider, is putting up these centers, small centers around the world. And what they're doing is taking the technology part of the equation, all the complexity of the technology off the table. So when you're organizing these events, you just need to focus on the communication, the people, and the content. And then they're doing it at somewhere between $200 to $400 an hour per room, depending on the numbers and what you're trying to achieve. And I think that part is really clever, because just like you would come to a hotel or whatever and say, I would like to reserve space, you can do it in exactly the same way. Let's get here from Sue.
Just to really echo what Martin said, my experience of telepresence is that, I mean, we work with Cisco, so duh, and also with some other major corporate clients. Companies like Procter & Gamble, for example, have telepresence in their offices in Geneva, and they use it all the time. In recent discussions with two major international convention centres, I'm aware of at least two facilities now on the convention centre side of the industry that are now looking to install telepresence suites. So it's really great technology.
Thanks. Thanks, Sue. So one of the things that I think, as Martin and Sue said, this is coming along, it's growing, and it's helping to drive down the costs and save the time. And then as these facilities become easier to access, then these become an alternative format for putting together your event. And as Sue said, a lot of large corporations already have these facilities, and they've been using them for years. I used to work at Ford Motor Company back at the late 90s, and we had these between connecting all of our sites. But now, you know, while that was the case, what you're seeing right now is that these are becoming more available to different types of events and becoming economical for different types of clients. You don't have to be a super large corporation to use this technology. All right. And then the other there's two more things about this. We're also starting to see people, rather than have a panel session where you fly in speakers and they're only there for the 1 hour for the panel session, this same technology can be used to bring in the speakers and set them up in almost the same kind of size and dimension on the stage so they can be a part of that. So think about that as an opportunity, especially if the center has the capabilities. And I'd learned about there's a brand new telepresence technology that's made for the kind of the small business professional. It's just come on the market, and so new. The name escapes me. But really, what they've designed it to do is to do this. So you can be at your home and do telepresence to other places and have the same kind of high-quality video, because you have the connections and they have a way to compress the video so it will transmit efficiently and arrive in the high quality on the other end. And so as these tools become more available, this becomes an option in your toolbox. Okay. We won't talk about this, but this is a GE center. GE got tired of flying executives and trainers and people all over the world. So what they did is they built these centers for 60 people. So they have rooms for 60 people at a time that they can do telepresence on. Which I guess the bottom line there is that your corporate clients, if you're dealing with corporate clients, they're going to be used to some of this. So you also need to have an understanding of it. But they will be familiar with it if you propose it to them. And they might even have facilities to do it. Okay, virtual platforms. There's another kind of this kind of virtual world or virtual platform comes in two varieties. I think it comes in two varieties. Kind of a two-dimensional world, like the InExpo platform, where you go in and you navigate through by clicking into different rooms and different spaces, but you eventually end up at a video with a chat function. But then there's also the virtual world component, which is here. And in the virtual world component, there's also platforms that are in this space. And what they do allow you to do is to have an avatar and navigate around in this space in a 3D way. There are pros and cons to all of it. But it depends upon the experience that you try to create. In the in this kind of the InExpo type world, there are a lot of people using that. It's the user experience to get and the user learning curve to learn how to use that is much lower than in a 3D world where you have to navigate around and learn how to navigate. But there are companies or there are conference centers like Virtualis, which is in Second Life, which is a conference center that was designed by meeting planners in the United States. They designed this center so it would work. And what they've done are two interesting things. Sadly, I don't have the picture, but these spaces can all be redefined very quickly. So if you were to approach them and say, you know what, I think this is all nice, but I want mine branded like this. I would like mine to have this effect. I would like to have my brand logo on the ground and have tropical palm trees or whatever you want to have. You can change that. But the most powerful thing that I've seen in these virtual worlds is when they change the learning space altogether. Instead of having chairs in rows or chairs in a circle, they're putting people in three-dimensional spaces. They're using the technology to change the learning environment. And Dan Parks is the founder of this Virtualis. And what he said is that once you start to do that, you already start to change minds about how they should think, and you start to open up their minds if they're sitting on a cloud as a virtual character. And so so that's something to think about. And again, these are to put these together, the costs are, yeah. So the costs are really low, so if they try to charge you a lot, you should push back on that. But they have the ability to customize to what your needs are. Inside some of these centers, you're having a lot of people doing training and education events. They're figuring out ways to manage engagement so that attendees don't turn it on and show up and then disappear, right? So that they're staying in, and so they're managing it that way. The other thing, alludes to it, but I said that in these 3D worlds, there's a learning curve for the attendee. How do I navigate it? And these centers have recognized that, and in many cases have kind of a an onboarding process or a ramp-up process. So when you walk into the center, to this virtual world, they have the they have a guide to help you, a guide that arrives that's a real person. They can either chat with you or talk to you, or if you really can't figure it out, they'll call you, right, and get you on the phone wherever you are and make sure that you're comfortable. And they have a set of steps for the top 10 things that you can do to get on board with this. And so the idea then is that the attendee isn't fumbling around with technology, but the attendee is engaging, is learning, and networking with other people the way that they're supposed to. Okay? Okay. So, our time is... We have plenty of time, she says. Okay, so now what I want to do, I have two more slides, and then I want to just open it up to your questions. And in fact, if you have questions right now, do you have any questions on these last slides? Okay. All right. So when it comes to a hybrid meeting, these are the bonus slides that we get to talk about. There are four things that I've been learning in the last few weeks when it comes to participating and being a part of these events that I think you need to write down and note around best practices. The first one is to set up a back channel. Do you know what a back channel is? A back channel is a method of communication for your virtual attendees. Okay, that could be included in the software you purchase. It could be part of a Twitter stream if you have an open conference. But what you want is you want a place for these people to communicate, because what's going to happen is that the virtual attendees are a different breed of attendee. They're going to ask questions, but they're also happy to not wait for the speaker to answer the question. If the other guy knows the answer, he's going to respond, or she will respond and give the answer. And that's an important thing. You want to have them, or create an opportunity for them to communicate. Second, you want to have a moderator of the back channel and of what the virtual attendees are saying and thinking and doing. The reason is when they're watching your on-site, they know everything that the face-to-face attendees are doing. But the face-to-face attendees have no idea what they're thinking or saying or doing. Even the speaker may not know. And so the moderator can capture those ideas and then bring them into the face-to-face environment so that everyone gets it. The other thing that's important is that when you do this, you want to have video interviews. So when you finish one session, so today, for example, if this were being live streamed and someone was out there watching, they would see this session, and then when we all leave, there would be a bunch of fumbling around with people taking away computers and getting coffee and all of this. But what you can do to engage those attendees is to have interviews. So have an MC of sorts, grab the speaker or grab another attendee. What did you think of that last session? And I think the best analogy here is to think about when you watch maybe a political speech on television, what happens after that. They always have some feedback from the crowd. What are they doing? And this keeps the attendee alert and engaged, rather than looking at much more administrative things, what people doing a changeover of the room. So that part is really valuable, and this creates a lot of value for attendees because it's a bit of a bonus, and I would describe it as a new thing that's emerging. Then finally, the thing that I would say here is to share the highlights of the presentation. So if you can identify someone to share the highlights, so if there were sound bites that are worth sending out to the virtual audience, and have someone that can do that, then those get shared in a much broader way, right? So if you have an open event, again, if this is a corporate event, it's a different thing, but if you have an open event that you want to reach out and connect to a much broader audience, to those like-minded people that have no idea that your event exists, what you can do is share these highlights, and then those will eventually get streamed out. Perfect example, last week at Meet Different, one of the sessions used this guy, Glenn Thayer, as a moderator. Okay, Glenn Thayer moderated the back channel and brought in all the questions that those people had. He even brought in their answers. So sometimes they had a question and they answered the question before he could even bring it up to the speaker. He still would bring it up to the speaker to share it with the face-to-face audience and say, here was the question, here was the answer. Then everybody knew. The next thing that was happening is that these highlights were being shared by some of the attendees. They didn't have a person assigned to the role, but they had the attendees sharing the role or sending out highlights. This then drew in other people that were interested in the presentation, that were interested in participating. Now, they weren't an MPI member, so they couldn't participate in the virtual access pass. But guess what? This was, in this particular case, just last week, it was an MPI event with MPI content that other like-minded people were engaged in. This person is now wondering, how can I get engaged? Tell me more about MPI. I didn't necessarily know about it. They're trying to learn about MPI. And then maybe they'll engage in the content. And this was all based on people sharing the highlights and discussing the content outside of the conference room. Okay? So when you think about, when you do a hybrid event, you want to think about how you can not only bridge the gap between the virtual and the face-to-face world, but then if you share the highlights, how can you spread the message much further? All right? Okay, last bonus slide, and this one is on measurement. So this comes from the Virtual Edge Summit last week, and there. I don't want you to write any of this down except for these four words. I want you to write down reach, engagement, conversion, and content lifecycle. What I thought was really, really, when they're putting together their metrics, they're putting them around these four categories, but reach, engagement, and conversion are pretty obvious. But the one I think that's really unique and that you want to think about is content lifecycle. Because instead of just having all of this, like I said at the beginning, an explosion of content, how can I take that content and then spread it in many different ways? Maybe it's not for this event, but maybe I can use it in other ways. And that's something that I think is important. And then what they're doing is measuring that. How can we measure how far that content goes? And in this particular case, they have it for the on-demand, right? So when they do the archiving, how many people are accessing that? So they're asking themselves, you know, is it worth it? And what are we getting from that? And then not only in this group, I understand, not only is it worth it, but then they ask, what can we do better to spread that further, right? Because they know they have good content. They just need to get it into their to customers and potential customers, okay? All right, that's the end. That's what I have for you. So we talked, and just to summarize a little bit, we talked a little bit about how to think about it, how to think about where virtual events can fit into your event, right? To extend, stretch, change interaction, and then give you new formats. We talked about four different ways that you can use virtual events. We talked about how people are using them today, right? Where are they using them? When are they the right opportunity? And then we just talked a little bit at the end about ways to measure. All right. So with that, are there any questions? Because I know I didn't do a, I didn't give. Thank you.
Other than the obvious.
Hold on, we have to record it.
Other than the obvious human contact, what are some of the drawbacks of the virtual meeting?
I think that's a good question. One thing that's important is engagement. So I think how do you know that people are there? How long are they there? If you some of the statistics that exist say that people are participating for maybe 2 hours at most, two and a half hours before they take a break. So that's an important thing. If you video all of your content, people aren't going to come to everything. If your individual session doesn't create a lot of interest on its own, you might consider a highlight reel because people are more willing to watch a 1 or 2 minute summary or a 10 minute summary than a 2 hour presentation. That's a bit of a challenge, but that's really a challenge of face to face. Also, some of you probably checked out mentally at some point in the presentation because that's people do that sometimes. I think another challenge is that you're one click away from doing anything else. Okay? So, and that makes it tough, right? Some of you feel like, well, if you maybe you wanted to leave, but maybe you felt like, well, the logistics of the room don't really fit for me to leaving, so I'll just be polite and stay here. But on the internet, you're one click from doing anything else, and I think that's a big challenge. That doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. Doesn't mean it's not right, but you have to think about that and make sure that you're engaging, that your content is good, and that you're engaging, and that you're reaching the right audience, because also if they're one click away, maybe they weren't your target audience.
How is the technology holding up at this point? Is there often glitches? Does that happen? If the wrong click of a button from the technician, is the whole thing shut down?
I think the best way to say it is the technology is evolving, and so there are technology situations where there are problems. And so what some of the people are doing is they're actually recording presentations in advance, and then having for the online engagement part, they then actually have that live. But some of the things will be recorded. So you're seeing some people work around that way. But like any emerging technology, there's still a lot of learning, and so sometimes things don't work perfectly. Yep. Anyone else? Yeah. Oh, so I have to give you the microphone.
Actually, this is as much a question for the people in the room. One of the things that we've seen a lot is a huge reluctance towards anything involving Second Life. I think that it's much more commonplace, certainly in some North American companies and cultures, but most of our European clients are very, very cautious about it. It's just not how we operate. And I just wondered if anyone else in this audience, or indeed yourself, Sam, has any comment or experience about that.
I have an opinion, but I would like to see what other people say. No experience, no ideas? Okay. Actually, I have heard and experienced the same thing, that there's a large reluctance towards these virtual 3D worlds, and the reason for that is it doesn't seem real. It doesn't seem like I'm really the character. And some of these play, in I think the key word, I just said it, character, because people want to change a little bit of what they are, and it doesn't seem like you're engaging with the real person. And so in that context, some people are much happier having, say, something like Twitter, where there's a real picture of you and then just a text comment, or on video, where even though it's a small box and it's not a perfect box, they can still start to see the whites of my eyes and start to see what I'm thinking. And so for some of the people, that's very important. But I'm hearing the same thing. And I think what will be interesting in the next few years is to see how that plays out. Because it's not only Second Life. I think there are other platform vendors that have these kind of avatar-based, and to see how they bring it all together. So, any other questions? Any other comments? Loads of applause. All right. All right.